more.
Hi, friends. It's Paula Ferris. You might remember me from Good Morning America or The View. It's okay if you don't, but I have a new view now. My husband and I moved to South Carolina with our three kids, and I'm exploring new seasons of calling. Each week, I'm joined by friends to have real, honest conversations about their stories, their struggles, and triumphs, all to encourage and empower you. We're going to be talking about what people are called to do and who they're called to be. I welcome you in to the Paula Ferris Faith and Calling Podcast. So I have this nervous habit. When I'm nervous, I talk too much and I talk too fast. And in today's conversation, well, all of that happened. It happened because I'm talking to Jesus, and I'm referring to Jonathan Rumi, who plays Jesus from the very popular series called The Chosen.
I'm preparing something to share with the world. These things will make sense to some, but not to others.
I love this series so much, you guys. It gives me goosebumps. I laugh, I cry. The Chosen has set all kinds of records, including the largest crowd-funded project in history. So Jonathan has quite a story. He was born in New York City, never thought that he would be an actor. In fact, he wanted to do voiceover work, and he got his big break on MTV doing celebrity impersonations. Take a listen to how good he is.
If I were to do Ray Romano, because he's from New York, he kind of sounds a little like this.
So that would be my Ray Romano. And
Ronald Reagan's a little older.
Okay.
He said well a lot.
Yes, Jonathan's career and fame, they've exploded since he started doing The Chosen, but he struggled for a while. And it wasn't until he stepped out in faith and followed the call to acting that things really turned around for him.
I moved and I sort of had to quit my day job, and I just had to let it go. And moving across the country and then effectively starting all over, that was scary. And then I had to find other side jobs and day jobs. And I did that for several years until I realized that God was just like, no, you just need to trust me and just let go of everything you think you need to do to survive. Mm-hmm. And I'll take care of you. And once I did that, 3 months later, The Chosen called.
I cannot wait for you to hear Jonathan's story, how he gets into character for Jesus, how it all started for him, and how he reacted when my mom had some questions for him. Here's Jonathan Rumi. Hi, Jonathan. How are you?
Hi, Paul. We finally got it going.
We finally...
Finally connected.
And I had to chase you to Paris to get a dad, or wherever you... You're in France, correct?
You're somewhere. Persistent. I'll give you that. So God bless you.
I know. Like you could say, some have a different word for it, but I say I'm very persistent. It's probably what made me a decent journalist. Yeah. I'm good at chasing the story. And look, you're somebody that I've been dying to talk to.
Even from the Caleb Fan Awards. Mm-hmm. I knew we'd be sitting down at some point.
At some point, yes. Yeah. So we met at the K-Love Fan Awards back in the spring. And at that point, I had not watched The Chosen at all. Mm. And I was a heathen. I am no longer a heathen. I am part of the Chosen.
Okay, you've been brought into the company, into the club. Okay.
But I approached you because my mom has been buying us all of the paraphernalia and gifts. She's the biggest fan of The Chosen. I told my mom that you were there, and she's obsessed with you, okay? I think she might have a crush on you, my 81-year-old mother. And so you were kind enough to send her a video, and it literally made her decade. So thank you for that, Jonathan. But I started watching, and I am such a big fan of the series. And it has not only grown my faith, but my kids' faith, my husband's faith. I want to talk about it in a second, but you're in Paris right now. And you have some news coming out of Paris, some Chosen news.
Yeah, a little bit of Chosen news. We are having our official international premiere here in Paris, France, less than a week from now. Yeah,
amazing.
I think on Monday.
This is a global expansion of the series. Mm-hmm. So you're premiering the French dubbed version of season one in Paris, correct?
Correct. Yeah,
How cool is that?
Version of season one. It's amazing because it's also not only are we doing like a theatrical, like a cinema premiere with red carpet and all that stuff, but the main thing is that it's going on French national television.
It's going on public television?
Public television.
And wow. And
on the free channel, C8, for this. And that's never been done before. So
that's almost shocking.
It's totally shocking. I spent a lot of time here almost 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. There wasn't even back then, and it wasn't, the world wasn't as polarized as it is now, but back then you would never see something like this on television. And so this summer in Rome, I got to meet with Alex Sellerier, who was one of the folks in charge of organizing this whole thing and putting all the pieces together on the French side. We got to talk, and he explained to me the revival that's happening amongst many high profile, high level executives in the entertainment industry over here, and how that they're making it their mission to make Jesus is known in all of France, because most people in France, I've heard it said that, like, you can ask a bunch of kids on the street who Jesus is, and they're like, I don't know. You know, they don't know who he is.
So. They have no historical, even from a historical context,
nothing.
Not just from a religious nothing. Context. Wow.
Yeah.
That's an honor, but that's also a great responsibility.
Yeah. I'm curious to see, I won't be here when it airs. So I'm having a very specific kind of experience now. I'm completely anonymous now. And so I'm really curious to see what it's going to be like when I come back here. If it'll be closer like it is to the States. I'm also going to be going on one of their biggest evening talk shows that I think they, you know, France is relatively small compared to the United States, but I think they get something like 1 million viewers or something like that, which is substantial for France.
You say you're anonymous in France, but you are not back in the States. And you have a very specific look. So I would imagine it would be fairly difficult for you to fly under the radar. Do people approach you on a daily basis when you're just out grabbing a coffee, out on a walk?
Depends on where I am. Mm-hmm. In Los Angeles, it's begun to happen more. And Los Angeles is kind of, you know, any of the larger, more liberal, kind of lefter leaning cities. Which isn't a judgment, it's just a fact. Mm-hmm. Politically, the show is less known. It's less, for instance, we had, you know, for the Christmas special, there were fewer tickets sold in New York City than there were in, like, you know, Salt Lake City.
Yeah, you know, yeah. You know where your people are, right? You know where the demographics lie.
The fans in New York are just as, what's the word?
Fanatical?
They're passionate. Rabid? As the fans everywhere else. I mean, fans are fans, and they love the show. That's what I love. The good thing about New York as well is that I had, it's home originally. So I got to see a lot of friends that were, you know, in town there when I visited. But and I met a few fans.
What do people usually do when fans approach you? And A, do you go out with your normal appearance, or are you dressing incognito? Are you putting a hat and sunglasses on?
I mean, if it's Los Angeles, if I tell you, then people will know how to find me. So let's just say I change it up.
You change it up. Are there ever any wigs involved?
Never.
Okay. No. Hats and glasses.
I got to hold on to this. I have to hold on to this hair for a while.
It's your natural hair too, which is impressive.
It's my natural hair.
That's a miracle in and of itself, right? It's beautiful.
You're telling me. I'm glad I have it. You know, I still have it. So
you can thank your Egyptian father for that, right?
Yeah, actually, the myth is that's the myth. But they say your hairline comes from your mother's father's side.
Okay,
so it'd be the Irish line.
Okay,
so I have completely different texture from my father and from most Middle Eastern folks. My features are mostly Middle Eastern. My skin color is Middle Eastern, but my hair is Irish.
Right. My dad was full Lebanese, so I'm half Lebanese. And my skin color, my skin tone.
You look Lebanese.
In my eyes, but my hair, my mother is Polish and Lithuanian, and they have like baby fine limp hair.
There you go.
I'm lighter than my siblings, who I would say look more like you, dark hair, dark eyes, and my skin tone's a little bit lighter. Mm. Look at us. We're probably related somehow. Egyptian, Lebanese. I have so many questions about The Chosen and your character Jesus, but I want to back it up a little bit. You're born in New York City. Let's find out how you get to this point of where you are today. You were born in New York, correct?
Okay. Yeah, New York City, yeah.
Your mother's Irish. Your father is
Egyptian.
Grew up in the Greek Orthodox Church. But I was reading that
initially
your first dreams were to be in voiceover. Your initial work was voiceover work. You never thought you were going to be an actor.
I played a bunch of celebrities that fought each other. Clay animated celebrities that fought each other to the death on a TV show called Celebrity Deathmatch.
On MTV. That was your first, was that your first big break? Was MTV?
Yeah, that was the first job I ever did as an actor, period. Yeah.
Really? Celebrity Deathmatch, I went on YouTube. I went down a rabbit hole with this today, prepping.
Yeah.
It was claymation. So you had two characters and then you're doing the voiceover work for one of the celebrities. What celebrities did you impersonate?
Did 25 different voices over the course of 3 years. So I did, famous singers at the time, like James Hetfield from Metallica and Ray Romano, George W. a couple of times. So there was a whole list of them. I did a bunch of Mike Myers impressions.
Oh my gosh.
For all the characters that were big when he was on Saturday Night Live. So I think the references now wouldn't really land because it was so long ago. So. Mm-hmm.
And that dates both of us. Voiceover work was not just your bread and butter early on. It was really your passion. That's where you saw your career going, right?
Well, that was what I had hoped. I can't count on it because I would work very sporadically. I didn't have an agent at the time. I didn't have any contacts. I didn't know how to get further into the business. I didn't think I really wanted to be an actor. But voiceover, like a voiceover actor, that would be cool. And so once I started working, with MTV, I was looking for other ways. I wanted to get training. So I started training with a voiceover guy. I worked with this legend in the business, Stuart Dillon, and he helped me get my first agent. And then I started doing voiceover for commercials. And then I started location managing. And that was my bread and butter because I wasn't working frequent enough for years, really, to just not do anything else. So it really wasn't until The Chosen was I able to stop looking at other jobs or even have the time to do anything else.
Sure. Voiceover work, it just wasn't paying the bills. I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm going to. What are some of your favorite impressions? I hear you do a pretty spot on Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan comes up every so often, but
if I were to do Ray Romano, because he's from New York, he kind of sounds a little like this.
So that would be my Ray Romano. And
Reagan's a little older.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, he said well a lot.
It was my Ronald Reagan.
What about W? You've got, I mean, I can do a W.
Let me hear your really. W.
No, it's bad.
Listen, one for one.
Yeah. Strategery. Nuclear.
Nuclear. That's not bad, actually. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
That's amazing. You're a man of many talents. So you went to film school and you actually went to acting school later in life, but it was in film school that you vowed to never be an actor. So what changed?
Well, yeah. Yeah. What changed is the casting director who gave me the work for Celebrity Deathmatch asked me, she got an audition for the Video Music Awards 1 year. And she's like, I don't know if you're interested in this, but I have an audition for the, Video Music Awards. Would you want to try out? And I said, sure. And at that point I had worked, I think, a couple of seasons for MTV. So I was kind of getting used to performing. Mm-hmm. I got a little bit of confidence. And
were you still in New York at the time or were you out west?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was in New York. And so I said, I'll give it a shot. And so I had to, I think memorize a couple of lines in the script and then improvise some stuff. And there were a couple of other actors and then they wanted to see me dance. They're like, okay, just show some moves. I'm like, I'm sorry, what?
Wait, come again?
And yeah. And I was extremely shy and introverted and not comfortable in my body, especially if it, dancing in front of people for a job. I'm like, dance, my king, dance. I mean, it literally took, I was like, what do you mean? They're like, yeah, we're just going to play some music. And they put on the radio or whatever. And like, yeah, just show some of your moves. And I'm like, and just awkwardly tried to get through whatever they played. And they're like, okay, thanks. I'm like, thanks. And I couldn't get out of the room fast enough. And then I booked the job. And I thought, what is that possible? And so I thought, well, maybe God's kind of given me a sign here. Maybe I should rethink this. Uh-huh. And I ended up working on the spot with Reverend Run from Run DMC. And, you know, we were having fun and just off the cuff and I was comfortable. And he's like, hey, man, you're pretty good. I said, oh, thanks. Yeah. He's like, you've been doing this a while. I said, hey, you know, I just kind of avoided the question. I didn't want to tell him it was my first job ever. And then I started booking commercials and I thought, okay, this is pretty cool. And then I did my first play. And then that was pretty much, that was when, if you really want to know whether or not acting is for you, you should go do a play. And if you get bit by the bug, as they say, you'll know it immediately. How do I make this something I want to do for the rest of my life? Or as long as I feel called to it. Mm-hmm.
The irony that Celebrity Deathmatch and Run DMC kind of opened the doors and spurred you on to where you are today. That's what I'm taking away from this right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the truth. So
it's that and God works in mysterious ways, right?
That's it. Mm-hmm. That's the whole thing. It's like so acknowledging good. For me, it's like, okay, God must have a plan for me, you know? And I didn't have the level of relationship that I do with him now, but I knew he was watching me and guiding me and allowing me the opportunity. The other thing was that, I had two opportunities in my life previously to pursue different areas of the arts. First was as an illustrator, and secondly was as a musician, and I chose not to do either of them. And so I felt that when God kind of gave me my first on-camera job for the Video Music Awards, it was the first thing I'd ever auditioned for on camera. And I thought, okay, he's clearly a shot at something in the arts, and I am not going to dishonor that gift. I'm going to honor that, and I'm just going to try to see it through.
Was there any fear involved? Was there insecurity involved? Often,
always fear. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When we feel called to do something, I know I've had so many moments along the way where I was too scared. I'm like, wait, is this really you, God? Are you really calling me to this area?
I mean, I ask him that question every day. I asked him that question 3 hours ago. I'm like, is this really you, or is this me in my head, the voice in my own kind of wants and needs, kind of just like, hey, let's do this, or let's go there, or let's, you know, let's try. So discernment is huge for me. And
right.
I think we need to approach prayer and discernment with everything that we do in our lives, any kind of decision that's of any importance whatsoever, or even not such great importance. I think letting God in process on that process is vital to number one, obedience, and number two, you know, the gifts that he's ready to kind of give us when we are obedient, even if when it's stuff that seems difficult or scary. And so I there was fear, and then there was like, okay, well, I'm not going to quit my day job, you know, and I kept my day job until I moved.
And what was your day job at the time?
I was a location manager.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I moved and I sort of had to quit my day job, and I just had to let it go, and moving across the country and then effectively starting all over. That was scary. And then I had to find other side jobs and day jobs. And I did that for several years until I realized that God was just like, no, you just need to trust me and just let go of everything you think you need to do to survive, and I'll take care of you. And once I did that, 3 months later, The Chosen called, Dallas called with The Chosen, and I'd worked with him a couple of times on some short films, and things have kind of been sort of steadily inclining since. Sure. It's been amazing.
So let's talk about The Chosen, and that was a perfect segue because I wanted to talk about how it all began. And like you said, you had worked with Dallas on a couple of previous projects, and Dallas Jenkins, for those that are listening, he is the show creator, director. This is his baby. So you'd worked with him on several previous projects, all playing Jesus, correct?
Yes. Yeah, I did three short films.
How do you develop your character, your role as Jesus? We don't have any official photos. We have no video. I mean, often
you didn't see the photos?
I did. Did I miss that? I did.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
That's breaking
news.
Well,
I was in Rome in August, so once me and the Pope, we just, just like, yeah, I have something to show you. I said, oh, cool. Oh, wow, it's a photo of Jesus. No,
But how do you build a character?
Yeah, how do you?
All we know it has been the previous roles, and we don't know what his voice sounds like, and we don't know truly what he looks like. I mean, there's some descriptions, but not a lot. You don't know his cadence. You don't know his personality. How do you build this character?
I think it starts for me. Well, I don't think I know. It starts with prayer, first of all. Everything starts with prayer and just kind of letting go of my impositions on the character, not trying to get in the way of what I feel God is calling me to communicate as Jesus. And part of it is the voice, part of it the costume adds to it. The crux of who he is trying to find the greatest levels of human emotion that one can experience. In my mind, and there's no, I have no information that tells me this. It's just how I approach him as a character. I think his level of empathy was, because he's God, was we can't even consider what that would have been like. So the best I can do is try to just amplify my own sense of the emotional spectrum as I'm interacting with people, and to just feel it myself as a human when the cameras aren't rolling, and to try to just be the best version of myself, you know, as that God designed me to be. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's a struggle as a human being in this world, but, you know, that's what I endeavor to do. And especially as I'm prepping, you know, and then I reread books about Jesus, obviously scriptures, and I listen to people talking about him.
So I've been watching the series with my kids. That my kids are 14, 12, and 7, and we're all learning so much. I feel like it's so historically accurate. You guys have done such a wonderful job of really honoring Jewish traditions. I feel like I've learned a ton about Jewish culture, but at one point, I don't remember exactly what episode, my daughter, who's 14, leans over and she said, "Mom, I don't even feel like it's Jonathan acting. I really feel like I'm watching Jesus." Oh, wow. That's what she said to me. And I truly feel like that. It's like you have gotten out of the way and you have just allowed the Holy Spirit to work through you.
Praise God. That's the goal. When you get a compliment from a kid, I think it carries more weight than an adult because kids are just, they don't filter. They're just like, this is what is going on. This is what I see. So that's awesome. Tell her thank you. And that's my goal, you know, just to become invisible and to just let people see Jesus. I think that's why there's people have such a strong reaction when they meet me, is because like that somehow that's carrying through, and then they just sort of a double-edged sword. I think part of them expect that experience in person, which I can't give them. I'm just me, you know. So, but it's a beautiful thing when they can have that experience, at least watching the show and feel like a physicalization of Jesus.
I mean, my kids, you know, growing up, we had that iconic photo of Jesus hanging in our house. This is, my boys have this hanging up in their room. It's a picture of you from the series. Are there moments where the level of responsibility and the magnitude of this moment and this role just overwhelms you, or it just brings you to your knees?
Yes. That's how I can answer that. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
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 I mean, when you see this photo, and you know that it's hanging in rooms and living rooms and children's bedrooms all across the globe. Mm. You have become the face of the in some ways the modern day face of Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, what do you say to that? Mm-hmm. What God's designed and continue to be led through the experiences, all of them.
How do you stay in the right mindset when you're on set? I read you're a devout Catholic. I've read that you carry your rosary around with you.
I do. Mm-hmm. I do. Yeah, I bring it everywhere. And then we have things called sacramentals, which are, all of these things are just ways to kind of focus our prayer life. Mm-hmm. I'll always have some little sacramental with me that I carry with me. In this case, this is from a cave in Italy where St. Michael the Archangel is said to have touched down on earth. And so especially now, like I think spiritual warfare is so huge and so heavy and so apparent in our culture. If you just look around at what's
100%
on TV, like, you know, I think the enemy is kind of, he's got all the weapons out, you know, ready to launch them at any moment, at every moment, all times. And so
do you feel a significant amount of that spiritual warfare?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've become extremely sensitive to this kind of thing, which is why I carry this with me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and why I'm talking to Jesus constantly and, you know, just praying for protection, for peace, and because what we're doing is going to, it does not make, you know, certain factions of the spiritual world happy, namely the chief enemy and all of his soldiers. So I think people need whatever they need to kind of get through it and to kind of fight it, you know, whether it's reading the word, praying, talking, sacramentals, rosaries, whatever it is, whatever works, use it, you know? And I begrudge nobody anything. If something works for them, they feel a deeper connection to God, you know, you need to use it. I went on a tangent there. Sorry.
No, that's good. It's good. I learned a lot too.
Something I'm super passionate about. And, you know, especially because I get a lot of flack for being just Catholic in general. Right. So,
can you be a Christian?
Well, you're Catholic, but you're not Christian. I'm like, excuse me, let me just clarify.
Yeah.
Let's go back. Let's rewind the pages of history and let's actually learn what it means to be Catholic and how far back it goes. So, so any chance I have an opportunity to kind of demystify, whether it's things like the rosary or sacramentals or prayer life, and encourage people, like, you know, anybody can pray anything as long as they feel that they're connected to God, and there shouldn't be anything wrong with that. So
your Egyptian heritage, the dialect, the accent, did you bring a lot of that into Jesus?
Yeah. I mean, I the accent is drawn from my, you know, members of my family, including my father and my aunt who's from Palestine. So I kind of blended the two. She's got a thicker accent. He's got a lighter accent. And so,
What is your dad's accent? Since you're an impersonator of voices, what does your dad's accent sound like?
Well, it's more Americanized now. So if you were to be talking to you now, you'd hear it a little bit, certain words, versus my aunt, where everything is a lot more, rolled and it's, athletic and, her personality is just so larger than life. And so everything gets a little louder and bigger. Yeah, yeah. And so I just kind of, you know, squish the two together.
It's great.
You, the sound comes.
I asked my kids and I asked my mom, all huge fans of the show. I was like, do you have any questions that you want me to ask? Because I like to get out of my own way. Caroline, my daughter, wanted to know about Jesus's sense of humor, because that's something that she really picks up on. How did you weave humor into Jesus's role?
Well, I mean, most of this humor is scripted. Every so often, there's a few opportunities to improvise some things. One of the most notable lines that I improvise that comes to mind is in episode 6, after I've healed the leper and we put a green tunic on him, and I say, not too shabby. You know, that's something that my dad would say that a lot. Mm-hmm. So I would, I just threw that out there and they kind of left it in. Dallas and Ryan and Tyler, our writers, their whole approach is to, you know, make Jesus accessible. And that doesn't happen without showing the various, you know, moments in his life where you can't avoid humor. You know, that's we are human beings that know what it is to laugh, cry, and Jesus being like us in every way except sin, of course, would have had to have had a sense of humor, you know, on some level, especially when you're dealing with those 12 knuckleheads, you know? all due respect to the saints. But I mean, the way that we're depicting how
good.
They were knuckleheads before they were sanctified. I'm chief of knuckleheads as far as I'm concerned. But
King of the Jews and chief of the knuckleheads. That's
that's my role.
That's your role.
That's what I'm playing. Yeah.
So my mom, Carol, Ferris, who loves you. She's 81. Okay, she had a couple of questions for you. Don't blame me. Okay. Don't blame the messenger.
I'll see what I can do.
Carol wants to know, have you always been a person of faith?
Yes.
Okay. Carol wants to know, Carol has not looked at your IMDb page or your Wikipedia page. She wants to know if you would ever consider playing a villain.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, if the role is right, you know, every villains don't necessarily think they're villains. They think they're doing right in their minds. Okay. And they just happen to have warped minds, many of them. Right. So, and there's redemption in villains.
Okay. Carol also says, I love you, Jonathan. Are you getting married and do you have a love life? Now, this is also a woman who has a 49-year-old son who is single, my brother, never been married, no kids. So he gets asked this too. So how do you answer, Carol?
Well, I've never been married and I have no kids. It's up to God if that is to change. Mm-hmm. And despite rumors, I am not married to some woman in Canada, although I'm sure there are very lovely Canadian women there. Yeah, I think I read I had 8 children or something like that. I'm like, I'd love to meet them. I'd love to meet them, whoever they are.
Oh, I see. You're trying to build your own disciples, right?
That's right.
Just 4 more and you'll have a full crew.
4 more and we'll have a full house.
Thank you for...
Baker's dozen, maybe.
Yes. Thank you very much for humoring my mother. So aside from The Chosen, you have some exciting projects. I read that you're working with Stephen Colbert on an animated show. I think coming out in the fall, you're working on a couple of Netflix series. So what's going on for you outside of The Chosen?
Yeah, I'm doing a couple of animated series. I can't give too much information on those yet because they haven't given us the green light. I have a number of video games. One is going to be a huge game that I'm working on right now, probably the biggest game I've ever done, but all voiceover stuff. Same thing with Stephen Colbert. I might be doing a film beginning of the year. So there's a couple of things up in the air and things that I've been working on and due to all the NDAs, they make a sign we can't really talk about any of them. So,
okay, great. So when it comes out, when the press release comes out, then we'll talk to you about it, right?
You'll know.
Well, have a great time. I'm so glad we connected. Thank you for humoring my persistence. Have a wonderful time in Paris.
Thanks for bearing with me.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding me? This has been one of the honors of my lifetime. Do you speak French?
Oui, je parle français. And it's coming back to me now. So okay. I spent time here a long time ago.
I took high school French. I mean, we're talking 800 years ago. Okay. We're early 90s. So I'm going to say thank you very much in French. And I'll say goodbye. And I'll see you soon. So I'm going to say merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup.
Au revoir. À bientôt.
Au revoir. À bientôt. Très bien.
Très bien. Bien fait. I am doing such a disservice to the beautiful French language, the Parisians, but have some croissants for me, okay?
I'll have some croissants.
Okay.
Yes.
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Okay. Thank you, Jonathan. Ciao. God bless you. So yes, that is his real hair. And yes, everything started for him with MTV's Celebrity Deathmatch. If that doesn't prove to you that God has a sense of humor, people, I don't know what will. So a little update on the series. Jonathan tells me that writers for The Chosen are wrapping up writing season 3. Brand new sets and sound stages are being built, and they plan on filming this coming spring. There will be 7 seasons total for The Chosen. Something that resonated with me regarding Jonathan's journey, he had to take that leap of faith. He felt he was being called to something in the arts. He had to let go, trust that God would provide. So he did. He let go. And that's when The Chosen called. So I want to ask you, what's on the other side of your faith? What are you being called to? What do you need to let go of? And what do you need to walk into? I want to encourage you to ponder those questions as you begin the new year. Let me know your takeaways on my Instagram page. It's at Paula Ferris. Coming soon this season, we've got some incredible conversations. Cece Winans, Dave Ramsey, Tyler Perry, to name a few. I'm Paula Ferris, and it is an absolute honor to do this life with you. And I'll see you next week.